It's 7-Lad Ham! Woo-hoo! Brought to you by Good Game St. James. Diplomacy. Some countries have been using it for over 25 years. At 7-Lad Ham, we're known for our sensitivity and tact, but like three Greeks sitting around the last slice of baklava, what are the ambassadorial skills required to claim the sweet, sweet prize? When it comes to international relations, all I can do is send a Christmas card to my Auntie Judith in England once every 6 to 7 years. This is 7-Lad Ham. Sounds like this is the playground when I do it like that,
it does.
Doesn't it? Oh, well. Nobody noticed that. Diplomacy, the board game, was created in 1954 by mathematical madman Alan B. Kalhamer. But it'll be another 5 years before publication in 1959. One can only assume the majority of gaming envoys couldn't negotiate a mutually agreeable publishing date. It was the first commercially published game to see play-by-mail, receive support in amateur fanzines, and tournament players existed since the 1970s. Woof! That's decades, people. Today, it's published by Hasbro's Avalon Hill division, which one can only assume is a division of joy. Just let that hang there.
God.
It was inducted into the Academy Adventure Gaming Art and Design's Adventure Hall of Fame in 1994. I can only imagine the Adventure Hall of Fame was invented by Hasbro so that they could... Anyway,
yeah.
Disclaimer, Alan B. Kalhamer may not actually be a madman. So what does this all mean to gamers? To negotiate the best possible strategy before betraying me in a fit of political power play, I have Messenger Matt, always starting fights on beaches, McHale.
The sand flies everywhere when I'm there.
We shall fight them on the beaches. And Emissary Julien, there's a red under your bed, Rangeton. Welcome, Julien Rangeton.
Greetings, comrade.
Happy New Year, gentlemen. How are we?
Oh, good. We're all well, I think.
2015.
Who can believe it?
The core set from Magic actually matches up with the year.
For the first time in how long?
I don't know. Like when... since...
Did they start doing them?
When did 2014 then?
Well, so there's still 2016 coming, so in this year.
I sense we're doing maths, Matt. Let's not start doing that.
Without Aaron here to back us up on that.
Yeah, he doesn't know maths either. He just knows everything about every Magic card ever
written.
That's right. But he doesn't have to know what year it is.
He could probably even tell us when it was first conceived.
Yeah. Now, I don't know a sodding thing about this game, so it's a good job I have the politically excitable Julien Rangeton with me. You know, my Facebook timeline is mostly cuttered with lowbrow toss, interspersed with posts from Julien about fat, balding gits in suits making decisions and sniffing their secretary's chairs. How much of this is part of diplomacy, fellas? The board game.
It's really important.
There's chairs and women's bottoms.
Well, anything.
And
controversy is very
controversy.
I smell politics in there somewhere, which means that there's got to be a fair bit of sniffing going on.
Yeah, brown tonguing. Is that the word you're looking for?
I don't think that's what I was looking for.
Okay,
so it sounds a little bit like brown nosing, and not into that here.
So in the next hour and a half, we're going to learn everything there is to know about diplomacy from our gaming experts diplomacy.
We're going to be very diplomatic about it, I think.
Yeah. You're not going to start some sort of... Like, Mikhail, you're obviously Scottish, and Julien Rangeton is obviously a European...
Some description.
I've seen pictures of you from somewhere in provincial France.
Knocking around Belgium.
Somewhere in Europe. I'm European.
Somewhere in Europe.
German. He's all of it.
Yeah. All in the mix. So around the table.
It's going to be Scotland.
I'm diplomatically European.
He's going to Scotland negotiating with the rest of Europe.
Well, so how are we going? Well, I think that the only way to settle that dispute is through a fight.
That's what you've got to do wrong. You've got to use diplomacy, haven't you?
Well, if you're Scottish, I think anything starts with a fight and ends with
true.
A fight.
Yeah.
I think that's
ends with a failed referendum.
Yeah. I didn't actually hear that. So they failed the referendum, and it's still part of the British Empire.
Yeah, still. You're just England now.
Maybe next time, Scotland.
I think we've just lost all our Scottish listeners.
But we love our Scottish listeners. But
before we get into the review, how did you guys come about this game?
Well, actually, my perception of diplomacy was that it's an old person's game played by people wearing cardigans around. Around aged care centres and things like that. Yeah, well, and then I realised that, that might not be the case when Aaron admitted to being, he's going to play a weekend of diplomacy. And I thought,
But you are forgetting that Aaron is a colossal wanker.
He is. He wears cardigans.
Yeah. Oh, don't get me wrong. If there's a monocle and a pipe involved, even and a snifter of brandy, even though I use none of those things, I'm greatly attracted towards them.
Well, I thought so. If somebody as hip as Aaron could be playing diplomacy.
What was the word?
Hip?
Hip.
Or has a hip?
Has hip.
Has hip.
Yes, yeah.
He has
He's
two
not
of
hip.
Them. No.
Just don't let the dark-rimmed glasses that Aaron wears fool you.
It's the fluffy hair, you know.
Yeah, we know what we could cancel the podcast right now and just moan about Aaron for an hour and a half.
Welcome to the Aaron Moaning Podcast.
If only we had an instant feedback system with listeners, and I reckon right now they'd go, "Yeah, I don't want to hear about diplomacy. Let's hear the ins and outs about Aaron because he's in a different country right now."
Save that for the other podcast.
We can do whatever we like. Aaron, you're probably not listening to this.
It is more fun doing it to his face when he gets back.
But the funny thing is my perception of this game was it's very old, outdated. It's been around since the 50s.
Yeah.
So, you know, what appeal could it have to today's modern gamer, given that all the games these days are fighting zombies, being superheroes, colonizing planets?
Must have some core mechanics that have kept it of interest to gamers across the years. It's certainly not your Ludo or your Snakes and Ladders or anything like that, is it, which we're knocking around in.
So what's keeping it? My question is, what's keeping it relevant and what's keeping it valid in today's?
Or maybe we'll get that
gamers.
In the review.
Yeah,
yeah. Julian, how did you start with?
Well, I had a couple of friends. Aaron had played it before on a couple other gamers I know.
Was he wearing a cardigan?
He probably was.
Yeah.
Knowing his style choices.
Underneath a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Yes, that hip t-shirt. His Good Game St. James t-shirt.
Yeah, long sleeves and t-shirt cardigan combo, yeah.
Tell us more about that.
Yeah, about the cardigan?
No, about the the initial meeting.
Well, I didn't really get exposed to it that way, but I'd heard about it. And then I read an article that someone had posted on Facebook about someone who was exposed to diplomacy and their experiences relating to it, and it basically sounded like a horror story.
A horror story is in it's not a good game.
No, as in, like, the guy had a terrible time, but a great time at the same time.
Okay. Oh,
like, come and play diplomacy.
I'm going to smash you.
You're probably going to lose all you have.
Enjoying your life? Come and spend an afternoon with me. I'll make you feel like crap.
That kind of a horror game?
A little. Well, a lot of people, when they start playing diplomacy, they do have that. Their first game might be fun. Then their second game might be one of the worst experiences in their life.
Oh, right.
It's like, it's not everyone, but it does happen from time to time. And then those same people will then play a third game, and it becomes their favorite game ever. Like,
now, you are a politically excitable man, aren't you?
I can be, yeah.
Yeah. Well, like I said, legitimately on Facebook, there is loads of rubbish, and then there's the only serious stuff I see that comes through, and I don't read any of it, is from you about politics and stuff going on. And then and then all of a sudden, we're reviewing this game with you. I thought there must be something in this game which has appealed to you. Is any of that, you know, any of those sensitivities tickled by this game?
I definitely think if you're interested in negotiating, and if you are interested in some elements of politics and stuff with what's going on in the world, some of that is reflecting this game, and it is all about sort of giving your own viewpoints and seeing other people's viewpoints and finding some sort of middle ground there. And that's basically what politics is too. It's all about everyone has their own opinions and their own things that they want, and there has to be some kind of compromise there.
Do you have to like the sound of your own voice to play it?
I think everyone who plays it does like the sound of their own voice, but I don't think it's required.
That's why Aaron was there. Yeah, anyway. Yeah. All right, well, why don't we break it down and make it a little bit of a logical format, and we'll blob and we'll get back and we'll get into a Diplomacy, the game's review.
Let's do that.
Yeah. Diplomacy, back again after the pod.
Yes.
Blob.
Now, we're all sitting around the table, of course. We're going to be very diplomatic in the way we speak to each other, with respect and mutually assured.
You might have come to the wrong podcast, mate.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In that case,
my monocle fell out as you said that.
That's not a bad approach to having diplomacy either. You don't have to be respectful.
No, you don't have to be. No, but sure, maybe it helps. Does
maybe.
It help?
Maybe.
All right, so diplomacy. How am I going to win this thing? What's the objective?
Okay, the objective of the game, Julian, is to win.
Yes.
It is to win. Yeah.
Well, the objective is always to win. Why else do you play a game if you're not going to, like, make other people feel terrible?
But is the objective to win at all costs, or is it to win in a certain way? Is there, what's the end game? So what are you looking to achieve?
Yeah. The objective is just to win. It doesn't matter how you win. If you can win, you want to win.
Sounds cutthroat.
It's okay. Like whatever costs, whatever means justify the ends. Sometimes you do it very nicely and sometimes you don't.
Okay, as someone who's not played the game, this sounds like it's the same as every other game. How does diplomacy get you to the finishing line in the way that no other game does?
Well, first of all, you should start where you start the game, which you have seven people around a table.
Yeah.
All in more or less even...
Do you need seven people to play?
Ideally.
All right.
There are variants for less than seven people.
Yeah.
But I guess you can go deeper into that later. But you start with seven people. You start with seven powers. You start with everyone on a map of pre-World War I Europe. And your objective is to take over the map of Europe, if possible.
Okay. So what, is it like a risk thing where you end up with more territory? Are you invading
for
territory?
There's a control aspect. So you have to be, at the end of the game, in control of, I think it's 18 territories, something
like
that.
If you want to win, yes. If you need at least 18.
Yeah, at least 18 supply centres, I think.
Supply centres.
To actually win the game, as per the objective. But as I think Julian's alluding to, there's different ways to achieve that aim.
Well, there's different ways to go about achieving it. The way you achieve it is almost always the same as far as the rules of the game go. Mm. But where it gets interesting is how you're interacting with the players. Because everyone starts on almost equal footing. You look at the game and you just think, how can anyone ever win this game? It seems like a game that should not be winnable. Because if you get too far ahead, what stops the other six players from ganging up on you and pushing you back down the ladder until someone else gets far ahead?
Like, a game of takedowns.
If you think about it in a purely abstract logical way, it's an unwinnable game. But that would be a mistake when you think about this game. It's not abstract. It's not logical. It's all about diplomacy and emotions and manipulating people.
I can go down the cafe and have a conversation with someone if I want. I don't need this game. What am I doing?
Well, if you have a conversation with someone, you don't really feel necessarily superior to them at the end of it.
Any what? Don't feel what?
Superior.
Oh, I don't know.
You might if you've got very high self-worth.
Well, we're all... David likes the feeling of superiority, especially on his own pod.
Well, I think he'd like this game, unless he doesn't think he can win.
No.
So you want to be the... I think you want to be the great power of the era. So that's what you're trying to achieve. And the way to become a great power is not through force of arms alone. It's by backroom negotiations, making and breaking deals. Yeah, brokering peace between nations. That sort of thing, and then smashing it all down, I suppose, when it suits your purpose. So there's plenty of examples in history where that's happened. World War II is a great example, where Hitler, Germany, World War II, made lots of
the Third Reich
hacks. Yeah, the Third Reich. Here we go. Let's get political. Let's get correct.
Anything about the Third Reich is politically correct.
They made lots of deals with Stalinist Russia.
Yeah.
To the non-aggression pact in terms, and then immediately
that went
very well. Yeah, broke that within a small period of time. So that's the sort of thing we're talking about: setting up.
Set up alliances, as quickly as possible. Why aren't you just going to say... Well, I suppose we'll get into this into how to play a bit later on, but surely you would just go, no, I'm not going to form an alliance with you because you'll backstab me.
You'll have no friends. You'll have no allies out there from the very start of the
game.
Don't
you want to have an alliance with everyone
everyone? I just want my own little corner of the world just to peacefully sow my crop and...
Well, then everyone near you is just going to gang up on you and take your crop, and then
bastards.
That sounds like Switzerland to me.
Yeah, Switzerland.
Switzerland's on this board. Oh wait, no, it's actually not. Switzerland is the only place in Europe that doesn't exist on this
has
board.
Has no diplomacy.
You can look at the spot on the board where Switzerland should be, and it's just unpassable terrain.
Imagine if the world did get hit by an asteroid one day. I'd imagine the whole world would explode and flood off into space. But Switzerland just be sitting there still by itself going, hey, we're not getting involved in this.
No,
we're doing our own thing.
We're eternally neutral as they're hurtling through space into the sun, hopefully.
All right, I think I'm still confused about how to win the game. But let's move on to what is the narrative? Because it's a lovely... I can see the world map of Europe is spread out before us. It's mostly using the colours brown, which makes me think that it's old.
Yeah. So, well, it does. It immediately, you are projected back in time to when they only early had 20th century.
1901 is generally the first year that this game is meant to be taking place in.
Oh, so as it steps through the game, it goes through years, doesn't it?
That's the way they track turns. So they say turn one is 1901, turn two is actually autumn in 1901, and then turn three is 1902.
And then turn four is autumn 1902?
Yes.
Ah, we've got
and
it.
I guess what comes next?
Makes sense now. 1903 comes
next. Oh, yeah, you're right, actually.
All the way up to the commencement of World War One. So 19...
And it just keeps going.
There's
no conclusion to it based on time. There are some people do play like with limited amount of turns, so you have to see who's the best at the end of a certain number. But the general way to play is literally until someone wins or everyone who's still playing.
We don't know how to win yet, listeners.
Just wants a draw. So you win when you've got 18 of the centres on the board. There's 34 centres.
Right.
So you need to have more than half.
5 minutes ago. That's what we were looking for. So there's 34 centres.
Well, we went off on a tangent.
Get 18 of them.
Well, I didn't say get 18 of them.
You did say get
18 of them. But you didn't say there were 34.
High five, Matt.
So there's many territories, more than 34, but there's supply centres, which are basically major cities, major sources of resources. You want to get over half of those, and then the fact is, once you've got more than half, you're more powerful than anyone else on the board. You can't be beaten. You've won the game.
And there's no...
Until you've gotten more than half, you can always be beaten back. So you have to get more than half if you want to definitively win the game.
Cool. Yeah.
So going back to the narrative, the Austro-Hungarian Empire is still in place. The Ottoman Turk is still running the Ottoman Empire down in Turkey, and those Constantinople is still Constantinople.
Wow.
For, you know,
that is a long time ago.
That is a long time ago.
And now it's Istanbul, not Constantinople.
The Russian Empire is massive. It's pretty much the biggest thing in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah, why is that? I don't even know. Is that which is that one there?
Finland?
Is that Finland?
That's
is
Finland?
Finland part of Russia at this point in time?
I think
because it's coloured in the same.
Diplomatically, at the time, it may have had ties to Russia. The map is also divided somewhat. Like there are squares on the board which wouldn't technically have belonged to the nation at the time, but are coloured in.
The same.
The neighboring
like Spain
nation.
And Portugal is the
to
same.
Split them up sort of evenly.
Right.
Yeah.
You can see these are based on political, well, really geopolitical borders and alliances.
With, yeah. So the UK is all, it just says England and it's all coloured in the
that's
same.
That's right. Yeah.
I bet your Scottish blood is boiling now.
You never see an Irishman playing this game.
No, or a
well,
Welshman.
There's no Ireland.
there's no Wales. There's no Ireland. There's no Scotland.
There's
it's
Wales.
All England.
Wales is part of England.
Yeah, it's not even on the map.
Oh, it has got
a
name.
It's on the map.
Yeah.
But you find, if you look at Germany, for instance, you've got Prussia. So, and they've got their own very clear borders. Prussia, the Ruhr. What else have we got there? Kiel. So they're all
gives you a feel for the time as well.
They're all based on those early 20th century alliances that were carried on from the last century, from the 19th century.
And I see that there's kind of seven zones. You've got England, Germany, Russia, Turkey, Austria, Hungary, Italy, and France.
Yep,
does that correlate with your ideally seven players?
Yep.
Is that
each player controls one of the great powers of the early 20th century.
Yeah.
The idea basically is, as it's pre-World War One, and you're basically enacting the beginnings of World War One, and what you would actually need to do if you were to come out victorious in such a situation.
Okay.
There is still there's conflict going on at this period in time already. The Boer War is going on in South Africa.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not set against the backdrop of a very calm period of time. It's a turbulent time where
it's rising tensions.
Empires are being formed. People, you know, the English Empire is at this time starting to wane, I think, and they're starting to lose territory.
But for the purpose of this game, you're only dealing with you don't have any external things to deal with.
Yeah, you're not fighting over Africa. You're not dealing with America. There's no Asia.
You don't have to split resources to something.
There's
else.
There's no such thing as an American.
Yes,
they don't exist. America doesn't exist.
You don't have Gallipoli happen at any point in it.
Yeah.
Or no Australians, sadly.
No. So it the narrative is purely about the alliances that were existing at that period of time and, okay, what are the steps that lead up to the First World War? So we all know that the First World War, was started by a guy named Archie Duke being killed by an ostrich.
Yeah.
I think something like that, if you know your Blackadder. Yeah,
they're so a good band.
His assassination.
Right.
So that's the tipping point of World War One. So everything prior to that, back to 1901, is about those the lead up to that. So the geopolitical nature at the time.
Yeah.
Does
the historical setting at the time, other events that happen? You know, so you say we started off in 1901. Mm. By the time we get 4 or 5 years into the game, are actual historical events going to happen to influence the game?
No.
Or is it entirely up to where you take the game?
The game is very... The rules are very pure in a way. It is entirely... It sets you in a scenario, and then the game is very much about what the players do in that scenario. There's a reason, it was very popular... Apparently, it was JFK's favorite game.
I heard that too. And I thought,
and a few major people around the world, like scholars and world leaders, have said that they're quite fond of the game because what it does do is it sets up a very pure state for negotiations, which I imagine is what JFK liked.
He would have also liquid papered out the entire map and destroyed America on there with the biro.
He probably had his own custom map that just said America wins.
Yeah.
Every time someone beat him, he just pulls out a $100 bill, gets the Secret Service to come in, take them out, and he's like, America wins.
It just had North America, and there was no other countries, and he goes, no one to negotiate with. Nope. I agree with me, and I'm the most powerful person in this game.
Ich bin ein America.
JFK-ana.
Ich bin ein Hamburger. But it's very pure. There's no outside factors that affect the game. It's entirely about you have the 7 people on the board. You can move around the board, expand your claim of land. There are some neutral territories in between the countries. So every power has access to a few neutral territories that they can claim and then expand their powers based on that. But there's no actual events that happen. So the only events are other people interacting with you.
Okay, so to flesh it out for the listener, what are we using? What are the components that we're using to affect all of this?
Each player starts with a number of pieces.
Yep.
It starts with 3 for every power, except Russia, because Russia is big and has a lot of people. So they start with 4 pieces.
What pieces are we talking about here?
So there are 2 principal units in the game. You've got the supply centers we've already talked about, which dictate how many units you can have at any point. So if you gain more supply centers, then at the start of the next year, you can build more units.
Matt is now looking at the...
So they're represented on cardstock, quite weighty cardstock. And we've got what I assume is the sea units and the land units.
Yeah, there are fleets and armies.
Fleets and armies. So it looks like the battleship Potemkin.
Oh, there's a sea, which sea component.
Each one of them is actually designed slightly differently for each power. So
it is
based around early 20th century battleships, and the armies look like early 20th century artillery. But each power has a slightly ethnically diverse unit.
I actually wouldn't have expected that. I would have expected it to be more risks in style, where everything's exactly the same, no matter what power you're representing. They've actually gone to
done different art.
They've actually gone
artillery.
Into and done the representative of whatever was happening at the time.
There is something
I like that.
What some people do like to do, they get very much into that aspect that every power is slightly different. They play it with a different attitude. If you're the German, you're very expansionistic. If you're if you're England, you stick very much to yourself, or you have a very big beef with France. Even if the rules don't say anything about that, some people get into the history of the game and play as though they were that country.
You were mentioning earlier people take a stronghold in the role-playing side of it.
Some people have actually done games where they dress up. The English person comes in a tweed coat with a pipe and a top hat.
I'm in. Monocle.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds awesome. It sounds
absolutely no requirement to do that, but there's also no reason you can't. You're playing a fun game. It is a longer game. So if you can do anything
It's a longer game if you're wearing a monocle because you can't read half of the stuff that's going on because one eye's blind.
That's a shorter game, though, because you have the advantage that everyone just respects you more.
That's true.
Oh, he's come dressed up. He obviously knows how to negotiate. I'm not going to fuck with him. This game's over now.
You have 2 different kinds, so the fleets and the armies.
Mm-hmm.
And they work identical in almost every way. The only difference is fleets can work on the ocean and armies can work on land. And you have coastal territories, which is stuff like Marseille or London, which are actually attached to bodies of water, well, fairly nearby bodies of water.
That makes sense, because the last time I took my army out onto the ocean, they all drowned.
Yeah.
I didn't have
There's
any
no landlocked zones.
There are landlocked zones.
Are there?
So there are landlocked and waterlocked? Is waterlocked the word?
What do we got? Landlocked?
Landlocked bodies of water. Landlocked bodies of water. I think that's
like the Black Sea.
Yeah, exactly right.
Well, can you put your fleet on there, can you?
Yeah, you can have your fleet in the Black Sea, and then if you want to get it out of there, you have to control Constantinople, because Constantinople is where the,
so the gateway
body of water leads to the Aegean Sea, the Ionian Sea, and out to the main Mediterranean.
Wow.
The box also contains some tokens that represent your, I guess it's your influence. Is that what it would be?
They are small tokens that look like the flags of every great power.
Yeah.
And what you actually use them for is, for every supply center you own, you put a flag on it. So you remember how many you have.
So that's how you're keeping your score. Yep. How people
there are well over 18 flags for every power.
Yeah.
So everybody can see, everybody can keep account of what you've actually got as well, can't they?
Yeah. So it's the point is to make it easier to see the map, because normally you play with a time limit for each round, because you have negotiations between every round. If you don't play with a time limit, people can just keep negotiating forever.
Yeah, okay.
Like for the next turn. Each turn can take hours because people just refuse to stop negotiating.
I can imagine these negotiations. Look, I'll give you two Tim Tams and a bottle of Coke if you don't invade Bulgaria right now. You know, what's the currency of the game?
It depends entirely on your playgroup. There's no currency in game. The currency is power, literal political power, and threat. But it depends on your playgroup. You can really do anything. Some playgroups have gone so far as when they're playing online. I think one reporter who played the game previously with friends actually took a photo of one of his friends and opponents and photoshopped it onto a pornographic image and then blackmailed him with it.
That was going where I was going to go with my next point.
I think that was the tipping point in their game where the players got up and they just said, no, this isn't okay. But he was like, people have done bribery already. Yeah. People have already done other kinds of blackmail. So all I did was photoshopped his face onto pornography. Like,
you can just create your own currency on the spot or come prepared with currency.
You are allowed to barter with your opponents, and anything that the people playing the game think is fair game is fair game.
Like, it sounds like a game where you could start the night with six very good friends, and then by the end of the night you may be lucky to get away with two or three of them.
It's possible if you don't have a strong friendship with your friends, and if you're a very, very self-interested player,
you have a lot of porn, you have a lot of pictures.
It's not
of
a
them.
Game that friendships have never been lost over.
So leave your sensitivity at home, I think, is a suggestion. Take everything on the chin and play it for what it is.
Experienced players say that, like, sometimes you'll piss someone off in the game. It happens in a lot of games. Diplomacy, it happens slightly more often, and when it happens, it's quite severe. What you do, if you've just betrayed someone horribly, if you've just destroyed them, you're working together for the whole game, and you're just like, nah, it's time for me to just destroy them. You take all their territories from them. They feel really hurt that their friend just betrayed them. Just come over like, look, sorry, I had to do that because, frankly, it worked out very well for me. I'm very powerful now. After the game, let's go to the bar. I'll buy you a drink.
It's not gonna cut it.
It depends. Like, a drink is sometimes better than, like, winning a game that has no prize on it. You get a $10 drink at a bar. It's
in
expensive.
In terms of how to play, so someone else has got their a control of a station.
Yeah, of a supply.
Supply.
Which is representative of a major city.
Okay. So if I've got a city and you're going to take control of that, how does that happen?
Do I take control of your city?
Yeah, do you have...
If you've got nothing defending it, don't I just...
You can just waltz in.
Waltz in there and
so
take
I
it.
So I need to have some of my artillery hanging out there saying, don't come in. And if you've got an equal amount of artillery, what happens then?
I think that you can't actually stack units. So
the way
you
it works is because
units.
Every unit is worth exactly one strength.
Yeah.
Navy units and fleets, they both have just one strength. So if you're attacking a coastside town with your navy and they have an army in there, they'll just bounce off each other and nothing will happen. But if I also have an army on the coast next to it, and a fleet on the ocean, what you can do is, it's called a support order, and it's probably the most important thing in the game, rules-wise.
Yeah.
Which is that one unit can support another unit in attacking a third unit. So you have one unit, I have two units next to it, I will attack with one of them and support with the second.
I think one of the critical things that we're missing here in this that might be leaving you stumped is the orders section of the game. So it's a critical component. This is how the movements, troop movements happen. This is how, and I don't know much about that because like you, Julian, unlike you, Julian, I haven't played the game. I can only go by what I've read. But it seems to me that the orders component is very important. So what I'll go over is just the...
The phases?
The phases, yeah. So the phases, it's broken into two separate sections. So there's a spring four-phase turn and then there's the fall five-phase turn. So in spring, you have the diplomatic phase, the order writing phase, the order resolution phase, and then the retreat and disbanding phase. And so that's all happens during spring.
And fall is just the same again, but at the end of fall, you can also build units.
You can also
disband them.
Okay.
If you have too many units and not enough supply centers because someone stabbed you in the back and took some of your supply centers, you can't keep all your units anymore.
A certain number of supply centers equal how much you can build?
You can have one unit for every supply center. It's almost everything in game is a very simple one-to-one ratio. The rules aren't particularly complex in that respect.
Do units get destroyed? You know, I attack you. Do I lose?
The only time units ever get destroyed is if they have nowhere to retreat to and you have not enough supply centers for them. We can go into the retreats in a moment. I'll actually just break down the turn first. As you said, you've got spring and fall. So every year is divided in spring and fall. So basically, every year is two turns. Spring and fall are the same thing. So in spring, you have your negotiation phase, the diplomacy phase.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the most important phase of the game. That's what the game really is diplomacy. That's in the name, and it's in the game. And what you do, everyone looks at the board, looks at where their pieces are lying, then you get up from the table. Usually, you can do it sitting down at a table. Usually, you get up, walk around.
Right.
You walk to your friend, you're like, "Hey, Dave, can I talk to you for a moment?"
And I immediately go, "I need to go to the toilet. I'll be right back."
And then I'll go, "Hey, Matt, can I talk to you for a moment? Let's kill Dave."
That sounds like a very profitable idea.
And then we'll arrange a plan for how we're going to arrange our units to take Dave out of the game.
And you can support each other in that attack sort of thing.
You can support a different player. It doesn't matter who controls which piece. You can support any other piece in any other way that you like.
Yeah.
I could even arrange with Matt to attack Dave, and then turn around, support Dave, and attack him.
The old double cross.
Yeah, but the important thing with the diplomacy phase is that's when you have an opportunity to actually discuss what you would like to do with other players. Because if you don't have that, you're just guessing. But if you do have that, you can make surprisingly complex plans. I've seen some people make some pretty long term diplomatic gestures with certain players to get other certain players to work with them.
So it pays off to look ahead, to look into the...
Absolutely. If you're planning to win the game, you should ideally figure out where every one of your 18 supply centers is going to come from as soon as you can.
So if you're not planning to win the game, what actually are you doing? Are you just enjoying...
If you want to end the game without winning it,
but
you don't want to lose, you want to draw the game.
Bloody hell.
Because... As I said earlier, you've got seven people in the game. It's pretty hard to beat six other people in a game.
Right. So if you've got so many support centers, if we're all drawing, we've got the same support centers, and I think, man, the tide's really turned, I'm going downhill from here, I can try and end the game there by whatever means and draw the game? Is that what's going
to happen? The only way to end the game if someone hasn't won is if everyone agrees to end the game.
Table flip.
Table flip's another way. You probably won't be playing with those people again anytime soon.
It doesn't matter. I don't think I would be anyway, right? Because we're not going to be friends after we finish playing. So
maybe. I've played with a few people who stabbed me pretty horribly and it felt very bad and I couldn't wait to play with them again.
Okay.
So it's a weird game that elicits such strong emotional moments and then you're just so excited for it to just all happen again. Because it is strong emotional moments. You get very high highs in this game. When you've just...
Yeah.
Outsmarted everyone else, you just feel so good about yourself.
So you don't have to have any background knowledge of history whatsoever to come in. All you need to know is the process, how to play the game. This could be set anywhere, any period of time, anywhere. It could be... there was actually a version of this called... Not a version, but there was something similar... That movie.
The Frank Herbert
novel. Yeah.
Yeah.
A turned movie. And there was a version of the Dune game, which was somewhat similar, and that you can make those alliances and things like that. But Which just, I guess, shows that you don't need any background knowledge, no history, it doesn't matter. Events don't affect the gameplay at all. It's just your relations with other players, your negotiation ability, and the deals you are willing to, what you're willing to do to win.
So the main mechanic in this really is just relationship management. Yeah.
That is absolutely the most important skill. Like the rules, once you know the rules, you never get any better at knowing the rules. Some people like... Some people are very good at the tactics behind the game, which is how to move your units to beat other people.
Yeah.
But you can be very bad at that and still win.
Yeah.
You don't have to be good at the rules itself if you're very good at just talking to people, at understanding people, at looking someone in the eye and telling if they're lying to you, looking someone into the in the eye and lying to them convincingly. Or you can play this game without lying at all. I've also seen people play this game very successfully by being very honest, very trustworthy, never betraying anyone, just picking one person they want to work with, and just ending the game with two players. Because you can each end the game with 17 centers each. Neither of you gets 18, but you have exactly half each, and you're like, let's have a two-way draw.
Oh, now this is what I've heard of. So you end the game with two players, and you start with seven. Once you're out, you're just walking around the room. That is, someone said that's the downside to this game. Is that... What happens? It's like
that
once you're out.
That can be the downside of the game, but I've played it with... I played it multiple times.
Yeah.
When you're playing online, it's very different. There's online and there's real life, which is something you can get into later. But when you're playing in real life...
Some people will disagree with you there. For some people, online is the only life. Yeah. There's plenty of MMORPGs
out there. Well, in IRL, you play with seven people, but you don't... There's not a lot of reason to just eliminate people from the game that early. So you will start eliminating people from the game, but you'll find you'll be doing that once the game's winded up for them anyway.
I suppose if someone's in a weak position, they're also in a good position to go, hey, I'll help you get back into this game.
Absolutely.
If you
There's
help
a
me.
Term for that in game. It's called Janissary, which is a historical term relating to the Turkish Empire.
Yeah.
A Janissary was basically someone who was originally from the enemy, who joined their side, they trained and became part of their staff, their army.
I thought a Jani was that lion guy with one eye from Magic.
That's a Jani, yes.
Yeah.
And he's also got his brother, too. Jani Goldmane, and I don't know what his brother's name is. But yeah, a Janissary. It's like a Jani, but...
Different.
But Siri, too.
With Siri at the end.
Yeah. But that is absolutely what happens. Some people just get really beaten in the early game. But if you're smart, you pick someone who's strong, you go, hey, look, I can help you. I can help you win this game. They kind of protect you from one side... You help them from the other side, and you can still win from that position. Like, you can win from any position in this game. You can almost lose and then come around and win.
I suppose, in real life, there are critical military points in the world, aren't there, which certain countries want. Like, I think, looking at that map, I'm thinking, like, Gibraltar or something. I think that was really important to the British.
Yeah, for the shipping.
Because it covered that lane into the Mediterranean. So holding that one position would be really good. So I imagine that might transfer to this game, as in a particular place might become entirely important.
Yeah, and it's different in every game depending on who's working together and who's working against each other. Different points on maps can be very good choke points.
Okay, so I'd imagine there's no expansions for this game. Is that right? It's just moved into an
online
format?
There's no true expansion, but there are alternate editions. There's a particular one which has seen print called Versailles.
Right.
I can't remember exactly what the map of it was. I think it's something to do with France, based on the name. Well, that would be my guess. But I do know that it's an alternate map, and it's got a few alternate rules.
Yeah.
At the core of it, it's still the same game, but the game changes so much when you change a map. You can change the number of players.
Yeah.
Yeah. Online, they've got a huge number of maps, because it's very easy to just code a different map online. You don't have to go through a whole production company. You don't have to go to Hasbro and convince them to print another one.
Why haven't they gone into different maps with the board game version?
Because Diplomacy has so much history behind it. When people get together to play Diplomacy,
they
want to
see
They
that
want
map.
To play Diplomacy.
Yeah.
When they're playing it online, people who play it online play a lot of games. They play much, like... They play multiple games at a time. They're playing with different people.
Yeah.
But really, like, I played online and I played in real life, and I still find this map is just... It's very good. The guy who made it, the mathematician who made it, Alan Kalhammer.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did a good job. Like, it's a map that really reflects a balanced set of powers. It really puts seven people in an interesting position relative to each other.
So is there any... just looking at the map, is there any disadvantage to being England, as opposed to say being starting as Russia, who have the manpower to support by having the four units to begin with, the four
or being smack bang in the middle and having access to loads of options. That's a good point.
The difference between all the powers, I mean, for people listening to the podcast might want to bring up the map at some point during it, just have a look at how the powers are dispersed. But each one of them is so different. Like, Turkey is very much in the corner of the map. They don't have much of a route to explain.
No.
Yeah, they are very defensive. Russia starts with more units than everyone else.
Yeah, which is four, right? And everyone else gets three?
Yeah. Russia gets four, everyone else gets three. But Russia has to cover so much more ground.
So you could argue that there's another...
defend more.
Yeah. You'd argue that there's another disadvantage there in having so much ground to cover.
And then Austria-Hungary and Germany are both in the middle of the map.
Yeah.
So they have to deal with like a lot more aggression around them, but they also have a lot more opportunities to expand. Italy is stuck in the Mediterranean. And one thing that early Italy players will find themselves struggling to do is to grow, because you'll often take your first supply center and then you'll just be surrounded by other people who can't really attack you because you're surrounded by water. But you can't really attack them because you're not really joined to them either.
Wouldn't you just build fleets if you're in Italy?
You can. And that's one very good way to build Italy. You just build a lot of fleets and go attack people's coasts.
Yeah.
You sort of play a bit of guerrilla warfare. It's like each of them plays very different. France, again, starts off in its own corner, has a lot of opportunities to expand, but people often start ganging up on them too.
Hmm.
And England is completely on its own in the ocean, but they also start with the most fleets, and you can become a very strong fleet power.
Yeah.
The trick of England is you want to somehow get onto the mainland.
That, I think that's pretty comprehensive in terms of the diplomatic phase. The next phase, which is the order writing phase, this is the one that I found very curious, is the way you go about constructing your orders and then issuing your orders. So what form does that take? I noticed in the box there's a planning map, so that everyone gets their own copy. They can, I guess, can plot their... it has each nation which has an abbreviation. So for the purpose of giving orders, you must use the abbreviations and then you indicate the starting point of the unit and the finish point, and that's how they move around the board, basically?
Yeah, the way you write orders is pretty much as you described. Everyone writes orders at the same time, because you'll have the diplomacy phase, you go talk to people, you arrange what you're going to do for that turn. Then you go to writing your orders.
Is that a secret part where everybody goes off their own part of the room and...
More or less. You don't really want people to know information you don't want them to know. So, yeah. Like, there is value to hidden information and shared information, and you want to make sure that they stay in their own respective groups.
So I've just negotiated a deal with David here to not take over the Ukraine. However, my orders, I've actually indicated to myself that I'm going to take over the Ukraine. So that's where it happens.
You just
that's
don't want him to see that. Because if he actually sees you writing that order, he'll know you're backstabbing him and he can correct his order at the same time. But if you've arranged that, you're both writing your orders at the same time. You're both hiding it from each other.
Right.
David thinks you're going to work with him and not attack Ukraine.
Once the orders are written, that's definitely going to happen.
So everyone writes down their orders.
Right.
Everyone usually folds them up, puts them in the box. Once everyone's finished... Often how they do it is actually someone else will read your orders. But you can read your own. Depends how comfortable you are with trusting people to read the right orders.
Oh, so you can read out the wrong order.
No, if someone's reading their own orders and no one else is checking, you might just correct your orders after you see someone else's.
I've also heard in one instance where, like you said, the orders, they get put on a folded piece of paper in a box, and then like a first player is nominated, and then that person is the person responsible for...
They can read out all the orders
reading
themselves.
All the orders,
you can still cheat, then.
Anyone can read the orders. It's whatever works for your group.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of those sort of rules are pretty flexible. Like, you just do it however... Like, diplomacy, you can agree how far you're willing to go to get people to work for you, if you're willing to go to bribery or something, or if you're just keeping it purely to the game itself. Mm. Same with reading orders, however you want to read those out. Like, flexibility of the group.
Is that part of the next stage, which is the resolution phase? So the actual reading the orders, and then the units get moved.
Reading the orders and resolution of the orders is basically one thing.
It sounds like a game of baffling simplicity to me.
Well, the hardest part about it...
Baffling simplicity is a great term to use for it. It's a very simple game, but until you've played it, you'll just be like, I can kind of see where they're going with it, but I don't quite get it. Then you play it once, and you're like, of course, this is... I get it.
Yeah.
And then you just have a ton of fun.
It's very different.
Betraying your
friends.
Usually
when we have the game out in front of us and we're talking about it, and, you know, at least one or two of us have played it, it becomes remarkably apparent what you have to do. And this is still a bit, you know, it's a bit vague because you're not seeing those conversations that I imagine that can happen and have happened. And
well, that's a big thing about what you're doing in the game is you're not really learning about how to move the pieces or anything, because the game's not about how you move your pieces. The game's not about, like so many other games, running away from zombies or building your own deck of cards or placing pieces on a board. This game is entirely about talking to people.
Yeah.
And negotiating
which
things.
Which I do like, but something in this scares me.
Are you afraid of what might come out in the wash?
I'm afraid of people... what I might say to make things work out for me.
And then you really won't have friends.
Well, that's also an implicit agreement to playing this game.
Yeah. So we'll leave Julian to the end because I think he needs to know where. That's my stance on it. Simplicity, baffling, and a little bit of fear. Well, where are you at for this, Max? You also haven't played it, but you've well researched it.
It's something that I think I'd like to try this game, and I'd like to be able to really get into that thematic side of it. So I could quite see myself being thematically involved in the game, you know, cosplay if you like. get the old the suit or whatever. Get my
Final Fantasy VIII swords out.
That's it, yeah. Final Fantasy VII or whatever. So I could see myself playing this game, but I don't know whether it would be one that would have longevity for me. I like to talk. I like to talk to people. I wouldn't say I'm the negotiating type. Actually, that's not entirely true. I would say I am the negotiating type, but I'm not the underhanded type of person. See, I would be a very honest player. I would play. Well, I would be straight up the line. This is what I want to do, and I'm telling you what I want to do. I would have trouble with the hidden with the backstabbing and that sort of thing, because that's just my personality.
I feel like in my day job I do a lot of negotiating, but I hate every minute of it.
Yeah,
you know, it really makes me uncomfortable. Just trying to make things work, and So I think maybe that's where the fear of this game is, because it's like you're going to sit down and have fun for how long does this take anyway? It's usually
it's
couple hours.
A bit of a long game. Have you played Game of Thrones, the board game, before?
No.
It's very similar in a lot of ways to Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones was actually based on this game.
Yeah, I can see how that would happen. There's a lot of
Whole Westeros backstabbing, like everyone wants to, you win or you die.
but
it takes about 5 hours, I'd say, is an average runtime for the game. Yeah. It is a longer game, but any game with seven or so players does take longer.
Yeah, sure.
In and of itself.
Yeah.
And it very much depends how far you want to go with it.
Yeah.
Some people are willing to draw when they realize pretty quickly who's going to win, or they realize pretty quickly how the game's going to go. Some people just want to stick it out to the end.
So
it's about who you're playing with and
how many times have you played this, Julian?
I've probably played about 20 games of it.
So that's, and you don't foresee yourself stopping?
No, because
it's got no.
Like as Matt said, Matt's got a very normal approach to it, which is the game seems interesting.
I don't believe it.
It's the approach that people have when they come to the game. They go, "This game seems interesting. I like some of the things going on here." I'm not sure if I'd be good at it, because it seems pretty low and underhanded. Seems like there's a lot of things that could really put you off the game.
Yeah.
Then you play it, and you really realize that it's about how you get on with the people around you. If you're playing with your friends, it's basically like you're spending a few hours just being with your friends, having complex situations arise. And
losing your friends, making
you
friends.
You do some underhanded things from time to time, and some people do them to you. But you realize more and more that the most important thing in the game is actually when you're telling the truth to people, when you're trying to make people trust you. Because the most important thing in the game is trusting someone else. You can't win the game unless you trust someone not to betray you.
So that's two thumbs up from Julian, I would say.
Yeah, I'll give it the one. Sound like you're probably half.
I would suck on one of my thumbs and wipe the tears away with my other thumb.
I think the big thing is if you think it's interesting, give it a try.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people who think it's interesting have positive results. If you think it's just not for you,
could I use
be
zombies as my artillery? Markers?
You can.
I'm in.
Just fit it to what you enjoy.
All right, let's blob. We'll come back with Matt's quiz.
Fun.
Matt, what are you doing for us? Diplomacy-themed quiz, I imagine.
It is a diplomacy-themed quiz. Now, initially I thought I was going to keep the theme secret, but that's just busted it wide open. So that's question number 7 off. So we're now down to 6 questions.
How many questions? All right, 6 questions.
6 questions, and the theme is, yes, diplomacy.
All right, question 7 is... The answer is diplomacy.
There you go. Question 7, the answer is diplomacy. Write that one down.
Yeah, got it.
So right. I get 1 point.
You get 1 point. Everybody, awesome. There we go. This is one the freebie.
Real way, Julian. We're not going to get zipped today.
All right. Yep. So question 1. The United Nations took over from which broad organizational body charged with brokering diplomatic solutions between nations at the conclusion of World War II?
So do I just say it before Dave?
No,
write
no,
it down?
You just no, no,
write it down and then we'll check answers.
I'm going to get it first.
You're going to say it before me.
Yeah, I get the point if I say it first, right?
So the United Nations took over from which organizational body charged with brokering diplomatic solutions between nations at the conclusion of World War II?
Did I say that my Facebook timeline was full of pointless toss?
Yeah.
And then there's all the stuff that Julian knows about. Is this quiz going to be about all the stuff Julian knows about?
Well, I'm not actually Facebook friends with Julian, so I haven't read any of that stuff. So
got to rectify that.
So there we go. Yeah. So hey, I've made a new friend. Diplomacy brings people together.
Friends.
So that's question number 1.
Diplomacy makes so many friends.
United Nations and then...
Yeah, so I'm after the organization that came before.
Before, yeah. All right.
All right. Question 2.
Yeah.
There are several types of diplomacy. Preventative diplomacy, public diplomacy, soft power, monetary diplomacy.
Hard power?
No. Well, that could be one of the others.
Bestiality? No, keep going.
That's not a... I don't know how you could consider bestiality to be any form of diplomacy.
Yeah, I know. It's
diplomacy of animals.
You're
I think
hoping.
I was thinking of something else.
Animal
hubs. No, that's animal husbandry, but that's the Agricola podcast.
All right, so the softcore
so
diplomacy,
I think you should get a point for that pun.
Hardcore diplomacy.
I'll start again.
Yeah.
Preventative diplomacy, public diplomacy, soft power, monetary diplomacy, counterinsurgency diplomacy, gunboat diplomacy, appeasement, and nuclear diplomacy, which is also known as mutually assured destruction or MAD. I love that one. That's my favourite.
Dr. Strangelove, that's a good one.
That was Seven Land Hand, listeners, where we list off what types of diplomacy there
that's
are.
It. And the quiz is nothing related to that, no. Which type of diplomacy was applied and directly failed to prevent the outbreak of World War II and is no longer considered a legitimate tool of modern diplomacy?
Have you got that list handy?
Yeah, read it out again. Preventative.
Oh, right.
Public. Soft power. Monetary. Counterinsurgency. Gunboat. Appeasement. And nuclear diplomacy.
Right. And which one didn't work?
Which one of those directly failed to prevent the outbreak of World War II?
I believe that's related to the Treaty of Versailles, probably.
Oh, my God. I'm going to get hammered today.
I'm mostly guessing here, but...
At least it's multi-choice.
I do know about the Treaty of Versailles, so that's one step up.
We're learning things here. This is an educational...
Educational quiz.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Question number 3. Now, going away from that.
Yeah.
At the end of which movie do Emmett Fitzhugh and Austin Milbarge sit down with a Russian mobile missile crew to play a board game of nuclear disarmament by answering quiz questions? What is the name of the movie?
So wait, they're trying to disarm nuclear weapons?
Yeah. So at the end of the movie, these are the characters' names. Emmett Fitzhugh, I might give you a bit of
the characters' names.
These are the characters' names.
Right.
All right. Emmett Fitzhugh, otherwise known as Chevy Chase.
Oh,
and Austin
yes.
Milbarge, otherwise known as Dan Aykroyd, sit down with a Russian mobile missile crew.
I feel like being born in the 90s is going to hurt me here.
I have a feeling I might stump you on this one. play a nuclear game.
I threw
game.
Away the VHS for
this
I was
going to write war games, but I know that's wrong.
That's to play a board movie. Game of nuclear disarmament by answering quiz questions. And it's at the very end of the movie. Anyway.
Yeah. I'm completely stumped. I'm just going to write war games
because
that's a good
you
movie.
Write. But keep it secret from Dave. That's part of the...
I'm not going to write war games. No.
Yes. Funnily enough, that was my original guess.
It's a good movie.
Well, that's completely wrong. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or is it? Question 4. In the movie Lethal Weapon 2, the South African diplomat Arjun Rudd invokes the right of diplomatic immunity to avoid police prosecution. Right. He instead receives police execution. Finish this I'll line from the movie.
Oh, all right, yeah, go.
Arjun Raj says, diplomatic immunity. Roger Murtaugh says, blam.
Who's Roger Murtaugh? Is that Mel Gibson or something?
Danny Glover.
Danny Glover. Right. He says blam.
So finish the line. Well, no, his gun says blam. His gun says and then blam. He says something. What does he say? So Arjun Raj says, diplomatic immunity. And Murtaugh shoots his gun and says, what?
I bet
and
it's something give, witty.
If you don't get it, I will take the wittiest answer as the correct as the response.
Oh, don't do
all right?
that.
All right, so
we're
come up with something witty.
We've been potting for like 55 minutes. Okay.
I can see the sweat on your brow.
Yeah.
So okay. come up with, if you can't figure out the exact quote, come up with the best one-liner and that will get the point. I can see this is quite, I thought this was going to be an easy one, actually.
Yeah, once again, born in the 90s.
Oh, come on.
I mean, Lethal Weapon's a classic series, but I just haven't watched it yet.
Again, it's at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
All right.
All right?
Yeah.
Question 5. Who was sent to handle trade negotiations on behalf of the planet of Naboo with the Trade Federation, yet allegedly never arrived?
Oh, if only Madison was here now. She
so which movie is this from?
The I can give that away if he's asking me.
All right. Yeah. What's
well,
the answer?
It's from
that?
The Phantom Menace.
Which one's that?
The episode one.
Of?
The Star Wars.
There's only 3 episodes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I don't know, is it Jar Jar Binks?
Why are you saying them out aloud, your answers?
You don't know? Hang on. Are you not a Star Wars fan?
I'm a Star Wars fan, which is why I don't know the answer to a question about the Phantom Menace.
Right.
All right. I've got lost.
Okay. So what we have is Julian does not acknowledge the existence of the first, the prequel films.
I acknowledge
films.
The existence of it. This is very poor, so I don't remember very much
in
about
that
it.
Case, you're going to struggle.
What was the question?
So, I think you're all struggling. Who was sent to handle... Who was sent in to handle the trade negotiations between the planet of Naboo, Queen Amidala, and the Trade Federation?
All right, I've got it.
Yet they apparently didn't arrive.
Yes.
Allegedly didn't arrive.
Right.
All right. When you think about it, it's pretty obvious. Unless, of course, you refuse to acknowledge the existence.
Okay.
That's question 5. Question 6 is called Kiss and Tell.
Oh, no.
Ooh. Sexy.
All right.
Yeah.
This one, I could completely lose you here, I think. But anyway, we'll try. We'll press on. Henry Kissinger... was the U.S. Secretary, Secretary of State, a political scientist and diplomatic relations expert during the Nixon-Ford administration in the 70s.
True.
Now, you got no points for this one because, Julian, because David and I, well, we come to, was the end of the 70s, I'd assume, so.
What?
And what? In terms of age, how old are you?
Oh, I was born in 1971.
There we go. So, okay, all right. In that case,
He's old.
All right. So he's got a definite advantage.
I was watching the news then, though. I was like 9 when it stopped being the 70s.
I watched the
news
when I was 9.
The Vietnam War was still happening then,
I didn't know. It wasn't until I was in my 20s that I was I was alive during the Vietnam War.
Well, there's lots of diplomacy happening there. I'm surprised you didn't get on board then.
Because I'm not interested in it.
That's why we have Henry Kissinger. Anyway, so He was an expert during the Nixon-Ford administration in the 70s. He's reputed for saying many things. Raymond Teller is the generally silent partner in the comedic magic duo Penn and Teller.
I know about
that. He is famous for being on The Simpsons and not saying very much.
Yes.
Okay. I've got 3 quotes
here.
Such
a long question.
You just need to tell... Well, this is where it gets simple. I've got 3 quotes here and you need to either write down kiss or tell.
Okay.
All right.
Question six is a three-parter.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
All right.
So Henry Kissinger said a lot, and Raymond Teller is notorious for never talking.
Okay. So there are 3 quotes, and I want you to write down either kiss or tell, depending on whether you thought the quote was by Henry Kissinger or Raymond Teller. Okay.
So Kissinger, might have said this in the 70s, or Teller might have said this on a Simpsons episode.
They might have said it at any time. It doesn't matter where it came from, all right?
Yeah.
So quote number A.
Yes.
I always do that.
I'm with you.
Power is the great aphrodisiac. Was it kiss or tell?
Right.
B. The nice thing about being a celebrity is that if you bore people, they think it's their fault. Kiss or tell.
Right.
C. People are generally amazed that I would take an interest in any form that would require me to stop talking for 3 hours. Kiss or tell. These are quotes.
Yeah, okay. I'm with you. Yeah, I've got you.
So you've got an answer for each quote. You've written kiss or tell.
Yes.
That's the end of the quiz. All right, so we go back to the answers now. We check. Number seven. Yeah, you've already got that one. So what has been the theme of today's quiz? Yeah.
All right.
So that's your given.
That's a hard question. Good thing you spoiled it.
Let's go back. Well, actually, David's intro spoiled it. Let's go back to this question one. Are we ready?
Yeah.
The United Nations took over from which organisation? And I'll go to Julian first.
The League of Extraordinary Nations.
That's a good answer. I've got an arrow pointing to the left from the UN, meaning what came before the UN. Because I don't have a clue.
Yeah, I did write
point
the
to Julian
League
then.
Of Nations.
Was it the League of Nations?
League of Nations.
Wow, that sounds like a superhero.
It really does sound so much better. United Nations is like, I guess it makes more sense, but it doesn't sound as cool.
Yeah, as long as that superhero...
They should have put Extraordinary in there. League of Extraordinary Nations would have just capped it off.
The problem is
me.
It really didn't work because they just wanted to be superheroes and they didn't want to be nations.
It would have been ultimately more devastating or more embarrassing for them if they had been called the League of Extraordinary Nations, Extraordinary League of Nations, because it all went to crap.
Yeah.
Question two.
So that's one to Julian and zip to me.
Yep. Question two. Several types of diplomacy: preventative, public, soft power, monetary, counterinsurgency, gunboat, appeasement, and nuclear.
God.
I'm surprised nobody asked me what any of them were.
No,
I knew what.
Gunboat's my favourite.
Gunboat.
Yeah, that's where
I
your military.
Gunboat. I thought I was imagining a raft full of Wrigleys.
Yeah. Gunboat.
Gung?
Yeah, gunboat.
No, I'm saying gum.
Oh,
G-U-M.
Gunboat. Oh, right. Well, gunboat is my favourite because you can just imagine it's military might. Basically, whoever has the biggest guns dictates the outcome.
It's interesting with the episode we're on, because Gunboat is actually a game mode of diplomacy, primarily played online, which is no communication. It's all gun, because it's military might. It's just Gunboat.
Yep, it's just steamroll.
You can't talk to any other player in the game. All you can do is move your units around. So you just move them up and try and intimidate people.
Yeah. There we go. See?
Yeah.
Learning more about the game.
So the answer was, David.
Well, softcore porn.
Incorrect. Julian.
I wrote preventative.
Incorrect. The answer was appeasement.
Boy.
When we talked earlier about Stalin's Russia, the pact, the non-aggression pact.
Yeah.
And that's an example of
appeasement.
And the League of Nations directly said, right, you can do this, but don't do any more. Okay, that's it. You can have... whatever, if we had the map, it'd be handy. But you can have this part of France, but don't overstep. You know, that's it. That's the line in the sand. And then, of course, they step over it again.
Yeah.
And so, remember, we're talking about World War II here.
Yeah.
So, of course, Hitler steps over it, and the League of Nations steps up and says, well, all right, you've done that. Fair play to you. We said don't. You did it anyway. But this is the new line in the sand. Don't cross that line. Of course. I want to do that.
It reminds me of Robin Williams.
That sounded like the Russian accent.
Yeah, it did, didn't it? Yeah. So in my best Hitler voice, okay, we won't do that. And then he did it again.
Yeah.
So basically, appeasement. That was the process. That was the diplomatic solution that the League of Nations brought forth. That failed and ultimately led to their dismemberment.
Bit which goes like that. Yeah, I've forgotten he's talking about Libya or something like that time. And he goes... It's talking from the maybe Gaddafi.
Something like that.
This is a line of death. You cross this line, you die. Okay, this line. Okay, this line.
Exactly
okay,
right.
This line. And
that's how appeasement works.
Brilliant.
Give you what you want, but then tell
them
no
really,
more.
Really want.
Yeah.
They all want to zig a zig. Anyway, let's
you're
get on
your
to question.
You're on your own with that one. Question three. Okay, so at the end of which movie did Emmett Fitzhugh and Austin Milbarge sit down with a Russian mobile crew to play nuclear disarmament?
Yeah.
Is that
War Games? Me first. Spies Like Us.
Spies Like Us. Point
Woo-hoo!
To David.
I'm back in it. It's 1-1.
All right. Question four.
Two all. 2 out of 7.
Yeah, because we got diplomacy right already.
Yep.
You're right.
Yeah,
two
that's
each.
Right. Okay, so this is where it could, you know, you're equal footing now. This could be the difference. Oh, no, who has the best line? Who can deliver the best one-liner? So in the movie Lethal Weapon 2, the South African diplomat Arjun Runner invokes the right of diplomatic immunity to avoid police prosecution. He instead receives police execution. Finish this line.
I like the way you worded that question. That was good.
Diplomatic immunity. Roger Murtaugh.
Yeah.
Bang. What does he say, Julian?
Shame you don't have bullet immunity.
Oh, I like it. That's a good one.
I wrote it a little bit in a different order here, but that works better verbally.
Yeah, because you just played it out. And it worked really well. I like
shame you didn't have bullet immunity. Good one.
Yeah.
David.
You're not going to read me in?
I'll read you in, yep. Arjun, diplomatic immunity. Bam!
Get vaccinated by this. That's good as well.
Yeah, play on words, though.
Puns.
What? Yeah.
I don't know.
I think mine is more appropriate to Lethal Weapon as a franchise.
All right, so
if it was going to be in a Lethal Weapon movie.
So shall we hear the real answer?
Yeah, go on.
It's just been revoked.
Oh, yeah, I know that one.
That's rubbish.
Let's see, I'm going to give Julian a point. Yeah.
Mine sounds more 80s-tastic.
Yeah. All right, 3-2, Julian.
All right. Question 5. Here's where it evens up again, I think. Who was sent to handle trade negotiations on behalf of the planet Naboo with the Trade Federation, yet allegedly never arrived? David.
I got so confused by this movie as to what actually was happening.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
It was at the beginning of the narrative.
Yeah, I've got Ewan and Liam McNeeson here. Not McNeeson.
Okay, who were they?
That is... Ewan is Obi-Wan, Kenobi. And I always forget what Liam Neeson's name is in the movie.
He's got a name.
He's definitely got a name. If you give me
Qui-Gon Jinn?
Yeah, that'll do.
Yep, and they were?
Jedis.
Correct.
Yeah.
Julian?
I wrote, like, Obi-Wan, Jedis, I don't know.
He's lying.
But, like, Obi-Wan.
Those guys.
The answer I would have accepted outright was Jedi. And there were. So I'm going to give it to David here. Three all. That's only one. There were two of them. I can give you half a point.
Jedis first.
Half a point. Yeah, that looks like Jodie.
Yeah.
She's hot.
I love Jedi. I love Jodie in that movie.
All right, so David.
Jodie Jedi.
3 points.
That's the Disney one coming up. Jodie Jedi.
I can imagine all the Stormtrooper helmets having big ears. You know, big white ears.
Right.
Do you think that'll happen?
Yeah, I feel like that would be less intimidating.
Hang on, so what's the score?
David, 3. Julian... Yes. 3.5.
Oh, you gave me half.
Booyah.
I gave you that.
I've got half the answer.
What? What did you have?
Ewan. Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan.
Now, Kiss and Tell is worth 3 points, all right?
Yeah.
It's worth 3 points. Well, 1 point for each quote.
Yeah, gotcha.
So, Kissinger, U.S. Secretary of State, diplomatic relations expert.
Yes. Boy, was he.
Says a lot of things. Raymond Teller, generally silent, famous for not saying much.
Yeah.
Power is the great aphrodisiac. What was your answer, Julian?
I wrote Kissinger.
I wrote Kissinger too.
You wrote Kissinger too?
No, just I wrote Kiss.
Kiss? You wrote Kiss? I wrote Kiss. All right. That's a point each.
Woohoo! Sweet.
4 versus 4.5. Okay.
The nice thing about being a celebrity is that if you bore people, they think it's their fault. David.
Kiss.
Correct. Julian?
I wrote Tell.
Incorrect. It was Kissinger.
Bingo. 5, 4.5. I hit the lead.
And the last one. People are generally amazed that I would take an interest in any form that would require me to stop talking for 3 hours. Julian.
I wrote Tell.
Kiss.
Incorrect. It was Kiss. Yes.
Yeah, just none of them were Tell.
No, that's right. Because he doesn't speak.
Yeah, but he sometimes does.
He sometimes does, but he's reputed for not saying much. What the great thing with me is now I can look at your page and I can see, David, that you wrote kiss, kiss, kiss on your page.
No, I wrote KKK.
Oh.
I was just...
much more politically incorrect.
I'm drawing a burning crucifix.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
As you all
question
want to
7,
do.
I've got diplomacy written down.
Yep, you can have a point for that.
Me too.
All Brilliant. Right. So the score is...
6, 4.5.
David, 6. Julian, 4.5.
Cha-ching, I came through.
Tricked me with that Tell business.
I was very, I have to
Especially
admit that was
C
quite...
was like, that's got to be a trick. Like, probably Teller said it about how he never says anything, so it's funny. I don't know.
That's why I had to choose Teller, I think. He's famous for saying not very much, especially during their shows. Yeah. But Kissinger apparently just doesn't shut up.
I've got no right winning that quiz. I appoint Julian as the winner. out of just, I don't want to be known as the person who won the diplomacy quiz.
Well, you won anyway. Deal with it.
No, I can't.
You won.
Well, I'm going to blob. Neats and twos.
Neats and twos.
One can only hope that it's more exciting than the quiz, even though Julian won it fair and square.
No, it's lead diplomat,
well
Dave.
Done. Well done,
David,
yes.
Wildsmith is just very good at diplomacy. Knows his stuff.
No, it's not.
Yeah, he's even being very diplomatic now.
He's just refusing to acknowledge his own excellence.
Yeah. No, no, he's shaking his head now.
I'm uncomfortable with all of this. All right. Neats and twos. Brought a tear to my eye, the Neats and Twos did this week.
Oh.
We had a tweet from a new Seven Land listener.
Oh,
hopefully,
welcome.
Hopefully he'll still be listening by now. I don't know if I should really read his real name. Is that Wes? I won't say his last name. At Dave's Golden Duck. He wrote to us and said, at Seven Land Hand, just listened to your recent podcast for the first time ever. Great show. And he did that bit in capitals. Can't wait for more. Now, I woke up, and I that was on the phone, and I was just like, this is amazing. That's a really nice compliment. Yeah. Most people just complain and say that we make too many knob jokes.
I had no idea you had a golden duck.
No, and it's got nothing to do with me. I immediately thought it would be Dave from Good Games.
Oh, of course.
So I thought, it's all a facade, but you checked it out.
Yeah.
It's all legit.
Yeah,
it's amazing. I was blown away. And then, later on in the day, the guys from the Bucket Show in Las Vegas... So, Matt Mattingly and...
Ice Cream Social?
Paul... Hang on, have I got it wrong around? Matt Donnelly and Paul Mattingly.
Yep.
God, I hate it when people screw that up, and I just went and screwed up. Anyway, the Bucket Show, they favorited it.
Oh, that comment. Nice.
It was brilliant. It was just like almost... It was like two little beautiful moments in the day. I just maybe weep openly for most of the afternoon.
That's why you keep that box of tissues.
What I'd like to put it down to is that Aaron has not been around. And people have started to warm to us. I think that is...
Makes you a little more likable, yeah.
That is the sort of the path that I see.
What are you trying to say? Aaron, stay where you are. Stay in merry old England.
Yes. He should stay there because it's working brilliantly for the podcast. All right, moving on from that.
Miss you, mate.
The Meat Axe. We're not doing anything with the Meat Axe just yet. He's posted a fantastic question on our Facebook page, but it's all MTG related. So I thought it's super insightful. And since we don't have any sort of full-on MTG plays today...
Play a lot of Magic, but...
Just leave that one alone.
leave that one for the expert.
Yeah, when Aaron gets back, we'll let him tackle that. So look forward to that. We've got a Meat Axe question that will be staying warm for a fortnight. And then... just jumping ahead a little bit. Do you want to talk a little bit about Matt's 365?
That's 365, yes.
What is this?
365 days of masturbation. Is that what you thought? Masturbation.
That happens every year. What's happening? What's different this year? What are you doing right after the masturbation?
Well, after I masturbate, I like to play a game. So this is 365 days of masturbation and then playing a game a day.
All right. Does it have to be a different game every day?
I thought hard about my criteria. I'm not basing this on what anything else anyone's done before. I just decided. I woke up one morning and just decided, I think I'd like to play 365 games this year. Right. Hey, wait, that equals one game a day. So I started a geek list on...
You just came up with the number and then you realised that it was the same number of days that's in a year.
How coincidental? Is it a leap year this year? I've got no idea. Which gives me one day off if it is. No? Okay.
No.
So I'm making an attempt to play a game of some form every day this year. So my rules are this. My games can be board games, card games, iOS versions of board games. So not just any iPad game. iOS game.
Okay, so you can't just jump on board and play Bedazzled or whatever.
No,
it is,
and I can't play...
There's also board games on Steam.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. But I don't have a computer at home. No, just the iPad. So anything that has an iPad iOS version of a board game. So Agricola, Ticket to Ride, Star Realms,
Settlers,
that sort of thing.
One?
Settlers, yep. So Carcassonne. So I've got plenty of games there.
Yeah.
So as well as card games and pen and paper RPGs, which links into our D&D podcast in a couple of weeks' time.
Yes.
So when we play 5th edition, I'm counting that as that day's game.
Yeah.
All right. So there's method to my madness. So it's pretty bold, pretty ambitious.
We're 10 days into the year. How many games have you played?
Nine. 9. I haven't played today's game yet.
All right. Panic's on. So let's get
games in my bag.
There we go. So I've got to play something so I can put an entry there tonight. But I can play these games multiple times as long as I'm playing different scenarios. So I can't play five times, hey, that's my fish, because it's the same game. All right.
Okay.
But I can play five times Pathfinder Adventure Card Game because they're different scenarios.
All right.
All right. So I can do that. I can play solo. I can play with one-on-one. I can play online with other people. I can play in groups. All right. I can't turn down a game if someone was to approach me.
I was about to say, if you're very lonely out there and you haven't had anyone play a certain game with you, Matt's your man.
That's it. He's I can't say no.
So Matt, say no. Well, unless, play some diplomacy.
Unless I can't say no, but unless I've played the game already, it's already on my list.
That's he's out.
He's or like, I've already played a game that day and I just don't want to. So they're my outs. In each game, I need to accompany it with some sort of brief description and an outcome. You know, did I win or lose? Simple as that. So, and I want people, you know, comment on my submissions if they really feel they need to. But, you know,
where can people follow this?
I've made a geek list on Board Game Geek.
Okay.
So all you need to do is look for Matt Marine. That was my that's my
your
username.
Maiden name.
My username.
Yeah.
And you can find
have
me on my geek
list. Have you got
that
ridiculous picture of you in your head photoshopped onto
yes,
a...
Yes, yeah, okay. That's it. That's the
Marine's body.
That's where it came from, yeah. So, and I'm compiling that list every day, so it's going to be the longest geek list, I think.
Look for Matt Marine on Board Game Geek.
Yeah, that's right.
Link
what else is happening on Board Game Geek?
I can link, and I've also got a link on my Facebook page, so if anyone who's...
Who knows you?
What also has
occurred on Board Game Geek, Matt?
Well,
Seven
Land Hand also have a presence now on
an unauthorized. We could say it's unauthorized.
It is unauthorized.
Yeah.
I haven't got my. It hasn't been approved yet, so it's unauthorized.
Because you told me, and I went, "Oh, that's all right."
Yeah, I was going to say by the admins of Board Game Geek, but
are there any knob jokes on that yet?
No,
or
because
we're waiting for people to submit those.
Well, I'm hoping people will submit them
because otherwise, people that have disliked us over the year might start using it and think it's a useful tool. Oh, there you go.
What I've said.
Yep.
I've set up criteria for this too.
Yeah.
Set up a very strict criteria. It's just geek lists, and it's going to be linked back to the episodes, to the podcast episodes.
Yes.
So something we discuss, like this diplomacy.
Yeah.
Is a topic that we've talked about. And so this is the game that's going to spark it all off. And my question that I've put up there is, what board games should all politicians play before accepting political office? I thought
Arkham
about
Horror.
This. Arkham Horror. So if that you can go on there and can add that to the list if you think.
Oh.
Okay. So we can have a look at some of the games that have already been put up there.
Yes.
Diplomacy. Funny enough, number one.
Diplomacy is actually very good for telling someone's a terrible person and you shouldn't elect them.
Dead of Winter.
Oh, really?
The Crossroads game, yeah. I put that one up there myself. That was my first entry because I felt that, you know, that's a game where you've got to negotiate with the other players to decide, do we kick those new survivors out and let them die, or do we let them in and you know, knowing that it would be morally correct to do so. So I put that one up as my submission. Some of the others that went up there, CO2, which was it's a board game about being environmentally minded and to help stop prevent global warming, so very political.
Yeah.
Is it only board games or...?
It's a board game, yeah.
I mean, only board games for the list?
Oh, just whatever. Yeah, generally board games, but whatever.
I think, Plague Inc. is a good one.
Yep. Yeah. Cosmic Encounter was put up there. There's a lot of negotiation involved in Cosmic Encounter, if you've played
it. So it's already live with activity.
It is. There is.
So
there's
jump
comments
on there
and everything. So if you like, you can find it on Seven Land Hand as the...
so it's on the Board Game Geek page.
Yep,
maybe we
is
can put
on the
link
list
to that. In the show notes as
that's
well.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
All right. So that's up there. So each
and maybe
board
even
game.
Your ridiculous 365 challenge, which I reckon's only got about 3 days left in it. But
we'll see how we go.
To you, Matt.
Yeah. We'll see how we go.
Well, if you skip
nine
a day,
in,
can
I'm
you
struggling.
Make it up by two more games the next day?
No, that's a rule I set myself. Is that
then
no?
Maximum
I must
score will be 364,
play on the day.
Right?
Wow. I'm not cheating here. I'm staying legit. I'm a school teacher.
What about
I
if
can't
you just
cheat.
Physically can't do a game on a certain day?
Then I. invent a game in my head or something. I don't know.
Oh, that's a good approach.
There's always 2016, Julian. There's always 2016.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, this is a personal loss.
This can be 362 this year.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
All right, so that's up there. So have a look at that. Add just, and it's all going to be linked back to the podcast. So the board game podcast, I might add. So it's not really going to be the magic ones.
Guess we'll be talking about magic on those ones.
That's it. So this is more for the board game enthusiasts out there. So yeah, find it. Seven Land Hand, Geek List. All right.
In the show notes, there'll be a link.
Great.
All right. So there's been a bit of confusion over where Stor Garrick went to. He's still there.
He's still there, standing in the corner.
Because in the Beer and Pizza show, towards the end, when we're all a little bit...
having a good time.
Having a good time. It was won by Tim the Meat Axe. Who immediately had it due rest from him by Tarbo. Tarbo had only just talked Meat Axe into playing the stupid Duress game that they've got. You'll be aware of this, right, Julian?
I've heard about it. I've got a Duress card
that people that are playing have signed. And if you're holding something which I believe you haven't owned for more than 24 hours, somebody else who's got the card can Duress it from you if your name's signed on the card. Tarbo had just talked Meat Axe into playing this game. He'd signed the Duress card. He won Stor Garrick, went over and gave it a cuddle. And Tarbo immediately duressed it from him.
Oh, no.
Meanwhile, what was happening was that family Leilau it was on this table here that I'm pointing to, listeners. It was just to our left now. They'd been camping at that. And the youngest family Leilau member, just a small human female type person, used to sleep at the feet of Garrick whilst the rest of the family having a ball in store. And had put her name in to win Stor Garrick, and when she didn't win, she just started crying. And because she was a small human female, then Tarbo just had to hand it over.
Oh!
So he had it emotionally duressed off him, so to speak. But good on Tarbo.
Well, he's next level duress.
Yeah. They'd also stolen the axe off of him anyway. Before, they weren't going to give it back. So anyway, so that's where it is. Family Leilau got it.
Well, that shows what a caring, what a great community we're part of here.
I also think it means that out of the two or three competitions we've had, the Family Leilaus have taken home two of the prizes.
Wow, they're banned. they're barred. No more competitions.
Yeah, they're doing well. Okay. So that's the Stor Garrick thing sorted out. Meat Axe has also started a program of getting more likes for the Seven Land Hand Facebook page. We were at 133. I know that's a sad number.
Unless it's all right. It's growing. It's growing, right?
It was 133 at the Beer and Pizza show. It's now, you ready for this? 135.
Wow. Where did those other two people come from?
I don't know. I don't know where they came from. And it's going to be 136 soon because there was a young girl in Good Games earlier on today and she was having a chat with Dave and I just was also having a bit of a chat with Dave and I just told her, you need to go and like Seven Land Hand on Facebook immediately.
You need to go and like it.
She said she did. So I bullied someone into the 136 likes. So if it's not there by now, that just goes to show you that my diplomacy skills... garbage.
Well, I can just imagine that it's going to exponentially grow now because her friends, not to start, well, then it's even going to get bigger because on the Board Game Geek site, I've linked that back to the podcast. So,
hopefully you can get 33 more likes.
33 more likes.
I was thinking we could aim for 200, but it'd be good if it was an initiative or something that listeners might be able to think up, write into Facebook page, tell us what we should do. I don't know how you do competition or offer anything regarding getting to a certain figure or whatever. But
well, maybe it's something that the host and co-host could do.
No, I don't like the idea of that either.
What do you think, Julian?
Under the radar.
We can maybe depends how far you want to go.
No, that might be interesting.
Your suggestions. Put your suggestions in for what David and Aaron can do.
Not together.
For you.
Organize in brief terms for how far you'll go for it.
If we get to 200. All right, let's see how that goes.
200 likes.
200 likes.
Aaron and David will do something.
Submit what you want them to do and then like the page.
All right.
They won't do your submission unless you like the page.
That's it. Can we prove who likes a page?
Yeah.
You can check.
You can.
People have to submit it on Facebook to the page. And then you can easily check if they also like the page.
This is going down a terrible line of
I think it's a good idea.
Line of conversation solid. Is. So what I'm quickly going to do is distract you with a bit of philosophy corner, all right? Our next news item, a gentleman who once held a four-hour staring competition with a domestic cockroach. And it is said, when he raises an eyebrow in thought, the world's IQ gets ready for a swift kick in the bollocks. It's Axel's Philosophy Corner.
You're
new to this, aren't you, Julian?
I believe so.
Yeah. Well,
I haven't had one either. So.
Well, no, I see a lot of things on Facebook that I swiftly forget about for one reason or another.
No, you've only heard
this
of
might
this.
Might be one of them.
You've only heard of this through... Have you ever had an enema by a giant squid or drank a litre of whale sperm?
Unfortunately, I can't say I have.
Are these new concepts to you?
When I first heard that, I nearly gagged. And I wasn't even the one that was being asked the question.
Well, he's gone easy on you today because Axel's been sitting in his corner philosophizing about diplomacy, I believe.
Ooh.
And he said, he started referring to himself in the third person actually on Facebook, so it's getting a bit weird. Anyway, his question for this week is, are you ready? Would you rather have the ability to tell when somebody is lying or to make people believe your lies?
Ooh,
would you rather have the ability to tell when someone is lying or to make people believe your lies?
I have to give up one of those abilities?
Yeah, you just get to choose and give us your rationale. Is that obvious? What would you go with, Julian?
I'd probably go with the first one.
The first one, which is you'd rather have the ability to tell when someone's
having
lying.
Having free, open information is probably better than being able to affect other people's information. I imagine, would you then lose the ability to ever be able to lie successfully?
No, because it's only you. It's like a superpower that's
going
to you.
But I mean, like, if you can tell everyone else's lies...
Yes.
If it's a choice between being able to tell when everyone else is lying or being able to convince everyone that you're telling the truth, does that mean if you pick one that you're completely incapable of doing the other one?
God, I don't know.
No.
But like,
I need you to draw me a picture.
If you can tell if everyone else is lying but you can no longer lie yourself,
yes.
Or if you can convincingly lie to everyone else but you can no longer tell if everyone else is lying, it's like, that would be interesting.
That's a conundrum.
See, what are you going for? You're going for you'd rather have the ability to tell when somebody is lying.
Just open information all the time. Makes your decisions easier.
Okay.
But it depends on the terms.
See, I think I know where Matt's going to fall because of something he said earlier on. Where are you going with this?
I was going to go... actually, I'm going to go with believing my lies. No,
so you'd rather be able to lie to... Really?
Yeah, I'd love...
Now after what you said about diplomacy.
Never lying. You find it difficult to lie.
That's right.
You want to make it
easier
for yourself?
So you want to then gain the ability to lie and have everyone...
That would make me far better player at diplomacy, I'm sure.
Not necessarily.
There's other things in life, though.
I actually think the first skill, being able to tell when someone's lying to you, is actually better in diplomacy than being able to make people believe you. Because you can win without lying. But if you can't tell someone else is lying...
Does charisma come with that?
I don't think so. Plus 10
charisma?
No, I don't think it's your charm.
But you can
winning
lie your way into charisma. Wow. It's like, I will give you $1 million if you think I'm very charismatic.
Oh, I just
believe my lies.
Isn't it? Isn't there something somewhere about a study where they came up with the idea that society works better if you can lie, or something to do with relationships?
Yeah. If you can't lie, it just leads to situations where you just can't do anything that makes anyone happy. Because telling the truth in every single situation will lead to a lot of emotional extremes for no reason.
So in that case, if everyone believed your lies, you've got a free pass to all of that, haven't you? You can just lie merrily, and everyone's always going to believe you, so you have no risk. And lying is a
useful
tool.
That's also pretty uninteresting, though, if you have no risk.
Okay, so here's
just getting out of every situation.
Here's a scenario for you, then. Daddy, what happened to my puppy? Oh, he went to live on the farm. Oh, okay, then I hope he's happy there. Or the other way around.
Yeah.
Daddy, what happened to my puppy? He got hit by a car. Really? I don't believe you.
But no, but that is not an option.
I don't believe you. Would
you rather be lying? Tell one?
I think you're lying. Yeah, I stuffed it up. Yeah. I fucked it up.
Being able to successfully convince your small child that
you can
convince their favorite pet didn't just get killed.
Small children of anything.
Well, that makes
you don't need a superpower. It's called their small children.
Yeah, you just lie to them. That's stupid.
It makes bad news.
People are very, very stupid when they're little. Oh,
son's in the other room. Probably hear this.
It makes bad news palatable.
Maybe he'll be able to see through your future ploys. Like, wait a sec, my dad sometimes lies to me.
Right. Well, we need those little lies, don't we? You know, various figures of cultural significance that...
And in the first scenario, you can't even have someone lie to you and you just go, yeah, that's cool. Okay, I suspect he's lying, but I just want to live with that lie.
No, but you know.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
And it's going to eat away at you.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you don't get that
option. I couldn't have that.
I asked a boss to lie to me once because I said... Like, for 2 or 3 years, I was just saying, it was this ridiculous one-step promotion thing. First year, I said, do I get a promotion? He goes, no, you need to achieve some stuff. I said, all right, let's write it down then, A, B, and C. Over the next year, I'll do A, B, and C. End of the year, I said, done A, B, and C. Can I get the promotion? No, you can't. Oh, why not? I think we can get a lot more from you. I said, okay. So what are we going to do? And so, A, B, and C. Next year, I did A, B, and C. Do I get the promotion? And he said, no. And I said, can't you just lie to me and say, yeah, we'll give you the promotion and it'll just be coming.
And then delay it.
And then just delay it. And then I'll just walk out of here thinking I haven't, you know, assumed the position, vast up, and you've just waltzed straight in and just raped me. Well, I was trying to keep away from rape early on, but it's been planted in my head. Anyway.
That sounds like a tricky... Yeah, that sounds like one of those things.
Just lie to me. Sometimes, just lie to me.
Sounds like your boss wasn't exactly the...
No, he was an arsehole. Yeah. I saw him years later. I saw him in the... Because I left that job pretty quick, smart after that. I saw him in the mall and he was a withered, tired-looking shell of a man. And I didn't say...
And you're a mighty Hulk.
No, a virile...
Yeah.
A virile man with
I walked
children
past him,
to prove it.
And I didn't say hello. And in my head I went, ha! And that was my revenge.
Well, I'm sure he went home and died pretty soon after.
I bet he did. Good
or at
riddance.
Least didn't have a very satisfying rest of his life.
Matt, he went to the farm.
I don't believe you.
Oh, good, as long as he'll be happy.
Yeah. All right, next fortnight we're going to be back with some super exciting magic stuff. None of this diplomacy, democracy, political two-play stuff. Backing and forth thing. Yeah, we're done.
Yeah, we're done with that.
we're done with that. So we'll be back talking about all the fates that have been reforged after the pre-release fest. So that's in a...
They've already been reforged a little bit online.
A little bit, have they? Oh, well, we've seen a few spoilers.
The whole spoiler's up. Every card.
Last episode, we discussed them in depth. Well, Kian did.
Kian did.
And Ash.
I'm sure they had some enlightening opinions. Worth listening.
Yeah. Yeah, you can listen to that. It's available on iTunes.
It is.
At sevenlandhand.com. So, all we've got to do is blob and Matt can come back with the outro.
Well, I'd like to thank Julian for bravely coming on the show today.
Julian
Rajanton.
Yeah.
For expertly describing the importance of a sound understanding of the processes of negotiation in diplomacy. I think
he's convinced us all.
And we've walked away with a better understanding and maybe learnt something, overcome some fears, perhaps.
I'm generally confused and baffled, but I thought Axel's Philosophy Corner made me learn about lying.
So we've all walked away with something. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
Well, and for making me realise that diplomacy isn't a board game for those of the older generation and people who wear cardigans like Aaron. Although that pretty much does describe Aaron perfectly.
It does perfectly, yeah.
I'd like to pitch you a game idea. I'd called Diplomatic Bitch Slap. A game for as many people...
I like it already.
Well, it's a game for as many people as you think you can offend in one sitting. Basically, you get a room full of ideologically opposed players, and each turn, the first new player becomes the League of Nations Diplomatic Envoy. So we're already going back to that time where the League of Nations was a failure.
Pre-United Nations. I learned something.
That's it. Their job is to choose two ideologically opposed players and broker peace and understanding between them.
Oh,
so each player has drawn a card and they represent different ideological bases.
Yeah.
And the diplomat's turn is to try and bring them together via negotiation, argument, putting forward each other's points of view and see if they can reach an understanding. Every time they fail to arrive at a diplomatic, peaceful solution, the League of Nations envoy gets bitch-slapped. By the player who feels the most hard done by. The winner is the player whose cheek is the least sore or the least offended by the ideological beliefs of others. So the message at the end there is, it is. So if you can overcome the barriers of ideology and race and religion and come together in harmony, agreeing with people, basically being a nice person and accepting the views of others, you can win this game.
And have rosy cheeks.
Rosy cheeks and you win. That's it.
Or you can slap people.
If you really, yeah, I can imagine somebody playing this game who's really got a vent against somebody else. Yes, bitch slapping is probably the way to go.
I'd play
that's the aggressive way to play the game. Yeah, and that's it.
Beautiful, Matt.